You're listening to The Record on KUOW. I'm Jeannie Yandel in for Bill Radke. Amazon, Starbucks, the Gates Foundation, Microsoft, global powerhouses, and the products of people who dreamed big and made their dreams come true here in Seattle. This fall, KUOW launches an exploration of how and why Seattle has supported innovators and how their ideas have shaped the city's identity. We call it City of Dreams. Today, KUOW's Marcy Silman introduces us to the man who laid the foundation for Seattle to become the Jet City, a global economic powerhouse.
Every weekday morning, thousands of young Amazon workers overrun the streets of Seattle's South Lake Union neighborhood, lanyards swinging, eyes on their cell phones. Many of these people are new to the region, lured here by Seattle's tech-fueled economy. Most have no idea what the term Jet City means.
No, I've never heard that phrase before.
Chicago?
Jet City. Honestly, nothing off the top of my head. Maybe think Seattle due to Boeing and their headquarters here.
And most don't know the Boeing aircraft empire started just a couple of miles north of Amazon's epicenter, right here on the shores of Lake Union. A young man named William Edward Boeing, Bill for short, dreamed of a time when airplanes would be as common as the horse-drawn carriage.
So that first airplane, the BMW.
Michael Lombardi is standing in Boeing's vast underground archive, leafing through some early photos of Boeing aircraft. Lombardi is Boeing's corporate historian.
There it is on Lake Union.
This first Boeing craft was a seaplane made of wood covered with lacquered cloth, hand-sewn by the company's first female employees. Like so many of today's Amazon workers, including company founder Jeff Bezos, Bill Boeing came to Seattle from someplace else. And like Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates, Boeing was an Ivy League dropout. He left Yale and headed west to start a timber business near Hoquiam. Timber was lucrative, but Michael Lombardi says Boeing was a young man in search of the next big thing.
He liked cars. He liked boats. And so it was really natural that when he had the opportunity to see an airplane, that he just fell in love with that.
That was in Los Angeles in 1910, just 7 years after the Wright brothers made their first successful sustained flight. Boeing bought his own plane a few years later.
And Bill Boeing didn't think it was the best airplane, and he thought he could improve on it, which he did. He took that basic design and improved it, and that was his first airplane.
That same year, 1916, he and a partner started the airplane company we now know as Boeing. Bill Boeing wasn't only interested in flight. He envisioned an airplane industry.
Bill Boeing was very similar to a lot of the high-tech entrepreneurs.
That's Margaret O'Mara, an associate professor of history at the University of Washington.
The airplane. I mean, goodness, you know, there was no commercial market. This was very dangerous. The idea of air travel becoming something that people do on a, you know, regular basis was so beyond the imagining of the America of 1916. And he saw that future.
By 1929, Boeing manufactured airplanes as well as the engines and propellers that powered them. The company even ran its own airline. And Boeing had an exclusive contract with the U.S. Post Office. Ironically, this empire was his undoing. When Democrats took power in 1930, they accused Boeing of monopolistic practices. Senator Hugo Black led that charge, according to Michael Lombardi.
His accusation was that Bill Boeing and others had colluded with the Postmaster General to get exclusive contracts. Bill Boeing was brought before Congress.
And though he denied the charges, ultimately his corporation was split into three separate companies, United Technologies, United Airlines, and the Boeing Airplane Company.
But the damage was done. It was a personal affront to his dignity. And he was, you know, I'm tired of this whole business, and he retired.
That was in 1934. Boeing was still in its infancy, left to chart a future without its founder. But it had planted the seeds of a Seattle to come. I'm Marcy Silman, KUOW News.
Tomorrow, Marcy will look at how Boeing shaped Seattle in the second half of the 20th century. And she's in the studio right now to tell us about the other innovators who made a big impact on Seattle. Hi, Marcy.
Hey, Jeannie. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too. And we want to hear from you as well. Who was instrumental in shaping Seattle into the city we know today? And who are the innovators who are shaping the city right now? We're at 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-5869. And Marcy, you chose Bill Boeing as the first person to profile for your series. Why start with Bill Boeing?
Well, we just heard Todd Bishop talking about Amazon, Jeannie, and that's actually where it started. We were thinking about Amazon, and two big questions came up. The first one was that big question, why is this the city that Jeff Bezos first chose for that online bookstore? Remember, it was an online bookstore before it became a behemoth. And the second thing we thought was, wow, there are tens of thousands of new people who have moved here. And as you heard in this story before, they don't know what Jet City means. We were the Jet City for so many years. And so we thought, oh, this is sort of a foundational question to ask, you know, what came before?
Well, earlier I talked about Bill Boeing as being Jeff Bezos before
Absolutely.
Jeff Bezos. That's fair?
Absolutely.
How is he similar, aside from coming to this place to build his business? How is he similar to Jeff Bezos?
Well, so they both had visions, but they both were very good at figuring out how to monetize those visions. So they didn't just say, Bill Boeing didn't just say, cool, airplane, wow. He thought, I'm going to build this and I'm going to make an industry out of it. Jeff Bezos, very similar, right? He had an idea for online retailing, and we know what that turned into. Very similar kinds of things. Unlike Bill Boeing, Jeff Bezos still has his empire. Bill Boeing's was taken apart as a monopoly in 1934.
Which we'll hear more about tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, we'd love to hear from you as well. Who do you think helped shape Seattle and why? You can give us a call at 206-543-5869. Again, that's 206-543-5869. And we asked folks on Facebook this question as well, and we heard from Will, who said, former Seattle Mayor Charlie Royer had a huge influence on the tone and spirit of the city. He introduced recycling to the city and set policies helping the poor, affordable living, etc. His leadership made us proud of Seattle. Marcy, you are nodding vigorously. Why?
When I moved here, Charlie Royer was mayor, which if you all figure that out, you know how long I've been here. It was 30 some years ago. And I think it was a time where there was a lot of progressive thought about what city government should be. There were a lot of people who thought reform meant really opening up the city. I think newcomers are just laughing right now because we take all of that for granted. But Charlie Royer was a young mayor. He had come out of media. He was a television guy and just very charismatic. 3-term mayor. So you can see what people thought of him.
Who else springs to mind for you when you think about innovators, people who helped shape this city?
Well, I'm working on a story for next week, as a matter of fact, about Nellie Cornish. And Cornish might sound familiar to you because that is a college for the arts. And Nellie Cornish founded that school here in 1914. And arguably, it's one of the reasons that we are this major destination for the arts and for artists, I think, internationally known for our arts community.
I don't want to give away what your story next week will be, but in what ways do we see? I mean, I can easily see Bill Boeing's legacy. Every time I look up in the sky or I hear an airplane, it's Bill Boeing's legacy. What about Nellie Cornish?
Well, I think that you can look at the preponderance of theaters that we have. She brought a couple of theater pioneers out from Chicago in 1918 to start a theater program. And there is, obviously, the University of Washington has a lot of arts as well. But I think the Cornish School, because it bears her name, she was a radical arts educator, a radical educator wrapped up in what looked like a very unassuming package. And she managed to make this a place that artists wanted to come and work.
And you still see that here in Seattle today?
I hope, as long as we can provide affordable workspace and housing for artists, that this continues to be an art center. I think that we can look in the world of biotech and what has gone on there. My colleague Ruby DeLuna is doing a story that will come down the pike later in November, probably, about Donald Thomas, who figured out not how to make stem cell transplants, but how to democratize stem cell transplants. So it wouldn't just be a very, very close blood relative that you would get that transplant from, but how to make it so that you could find a match from a wider pool and save more lives.
How interesting. I have never heard of Donald Thomas. I assumed you were going to mention Leroy Hood.
Well, Leroy Hood, of course, is a pioneer. There are so many people that I can think of in terms of the worlds of theater, the worlds of music, food. You know, we have this wonderful food scene, and I don't know where we would date it back. There's some great chefs, but perhaps Tom Douglas, who really talked about local eating, and Chris Curtis, who started the University District Farmers Markets. I'm sure there were farmers markets before him, but it was the start of the era of the modern farmers market and locavore.
Well, we're talking about who helped shape Seattle, innovators who came here, who brought their dreams and helped change the place where we live. And Robert has called in with an idea. Robert, you're on I-5 right now. Who's your nomination for innovator?
I'm on I-5 now.
Hi. Oh, I'm glad.
My suggestion is a gentleman named William Street, Bill Street, to everybody. He was the CEO and part owner of Frederick & Nelson Department Store in Seattle and was a legend, just known throughout the land as the greatest service provider ever. One just quick example, I remember my father worked with him, and two ladies went to Europe, their very first trip to Europe in the early 50s, brought the film back to Frederick's to be developed, and they lost the film. Mm. By the way, the manager of the film department got fired for that mistake, but Bill hired a Seattle Times photographer and took the two ladies back to Europe to take pictures one more time.
Wow.
He was an amazing guy, and I think really as much as I admire the Nordstroms, and I do, I've been a retailer my whole life as well, the Nordstroms really took that kind of service across the country.
Can I ask, when was William Street the CEO of Frederick?
Say again?
When was that he was CEO?
He was probably in his prime in the late 40s, early 50s, maybe 1952. I mean, it was just the most incredible store, and he was just ever watchful. To offer service that would be memorable. And I really do. At that time, the Nordstroms were just selling shoes up the street, and they did a great job of that. But I really believe that they sort of absorbed Bill Street's style of retailing and made it famous.
Robert, so you see the legacy of Bill Street now with Nordstrom. Where else do you see it in Seattle? Do you see it anywhere else?
Oh, that's the most, I mean, as a retailer, Seattle is famous for, all Starbucks and Amazon. And, I mean, there's a huge list of companies that really take customer service seriously. And that came from Nordstrom, but Nordstrom, I believe, got it from Frederick & Nelson.
That is an excellent suggestion. I'm keeping a list right now. Thank you so much for that call.
Yeah, thank you very much, Robert. We'd love to hear from you as well. Who do you think was instrumental in shaping Seattle into the city we know today? And who is shaping the city right now? We're at 206-543-5869. So we just heard about Bill Street, Marcy. You talked about Nellie Cornish. I have a list of people from Doug on Facebook, which sounds like also, I mean, not coincidentally, right? A list of streets. Maynard, Denny, Mercer, Terry, Boren, Yesler. These people, in some cases, literally remade the topography of Seattle.
Absolutely. That's true. I should just mention, Jeannie, that if people go to KUOW.org, our series is called City of Dreams, and you will find a form there where you could submit your nominations and put your contact info, all that kind of stuff. So we really are, we're not promising to get to every story. That would probably take us centuries, but we want to have as many suggestions as we can in the hopper.
Marcy, I'm going to ask you something that may seem a little like out from left field here, but we talked about Seattle being a good place for artists. Joanne wrote on Facebook, J.P. Patches is somebody who really shaped Seattle. You agree with this? Why?
I do. I did not grow up here, but I've been here a long time. But my friends who are natives of a similar age, our former colleague Dave Beck, in fact, one of them, found that this early television personality, I guess is what they called J.P. Patches, was formative in how they thought about Seattle. And I bet wherever you might have lived city-wise, there was some kind of TV character, if you if you grew up in the age of television, who taught you how to behave towards one another, how to act in public, do be a doobie, don't be a don't be. There are all those kinds of things. And I think J.P. Patches was Seattle's version and much beloved by the generations that grew up with him.
And also, J.P. Patches was a clown as well.
A clown.
Yes.
I said personality because I was trying to expand it. There is actually a sculpture in Fremont to J.P. Patches. It's part of the quirky, privately funded public art that exists in the city. It's J.P. Patches just down from Waiting for the Interurban.
Well, we've got another call from Anne in Greenwood. Hi, Anne. Who are you nominating for somebody who shaped Seattle?
Hi. Well, I'm nominating Asa Mercer.
Tell us about Asa Mercer.
Well, I don't feel like he gets a lot of credit, but when I was in high school, he captured my attention, and I did a lot of looking up. He was the starter or the founder of the University of Washington.
Okay, so I can just pretty much walk a block and a half away and I can see Asa Mercer's legacy. There's also a Mercer Street. Where else do you think we might see Asa Mercer's legacy in Seattle?
Well, and I think the Mercer Street was actually named after his brother Thomas, but because he was more well known as one of the founding fathers of Seattle. But I just think that, you know, he had a vision when he came to Seattle for university, and there was nobody here educated enough to attend a university. So he actually had to start it as a K-12 school in order to get the first graduating class up to speed.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah, so I just think that, I mean, had he not had that, well, look at UW. I mean, my goodness, the influence it has, you know, locally, around the country, and around the world, and the kind of quality education you can get there everywhere from your undergraduate through graduate, through medical school, through law school. I just think it's had an impact everywhere.
Oh, Anne, thank you so much for that phone call.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So, Marcy, you laughed when Anne said Asa Mercer doesn't get enough credit. Why?
I just have to laugh because I think of the Mercers, and I started thinking about a book that a man named William Spiedel wrote called Sons of the Prophets, which talks about probably Thomas Mercer and Boren and all those early white settlers to the region who did definitely change the face of this. I should say that one of the team members on the City of Dreams team is looking at pre-colonial settlers, if you will, and to just talk about what this place was when folks traveled by ship and landed here in 1851.
Well, you have a theory about Seattle. You think that this is kind of a special place. It's sort of a magnet for people with big dreams. Why do you think that?
I think that partly it's our location. We are not just at the edge of the continent. We're not quite on the edge of the continent, but we're way up in the Northwest. You know, very hard to get here. So the people who did come to this region were very hardy souls. This was not, as Knute Berger says, the bride. We were definitely the bridesmaid and maybe just the mother in the other room. We were kind of this place that you had to be tough to come to. We were the place that was the provisional city for the gold rush. We provided, you know, jeans and pots and pans and all the stuff you needed to go north to the Klondike and make your fortune or not make your fortune. So we were the last stop of civilization in the United States at that point. So I think a certain type of person finds their way to a city like this. And I think we still are a place where you can reinvent yourself. Like, you leave whoever you were in Kentucky or Ohio behind, and you can be somebody totally new. And Bill Boeing was that guy. He left his family and behind in Michigan, where his dad had died and his stepfather didn't like him, asked his mom for his share of the inheritance and came here and reinvented himself from a timber man to an airplane maker.
Well, Marcy, we've got it looks like that last call dropped. I'm sorry. I hope that if Catherine in Capitol Hill. Oh, you're back. I'm so excited. Catherine, who's your nomination for somebody who shaped Seattle?
It's definitely Jim Ellis.
Oh, good one.
Who is Jim Ellis? Tell us about him.
Was not from somewhere else. He grew up here in Seattle and was a local attorney. But whenever he saw something that needed to be improved in our area, he took the leadership on it. Starting in the 1950s, when Lake Washington was so polluted we couldn't swim in it because of the sewage, he started Metro, mm-hmm. which was primarily initially just the new sewage treatment program and diversion from Lake Washington out to the Puget Sound. He then, in the 1960s, worked to develop what was called Forward Thrust, which was a variety of bond issues to really change this area. It included farm preservation, the King Dome, and, unfortunately, the voters didn't approve the mass transit system, for which the federal government was going to pay 90%. Atlanta said, we'll take it. he also helped develop the convention center, which included affordable housing in the area, Freeway Park. It was the first lidded park in the U.S. He's done a whole lot of things, and the most recent, well, recent being 20 years ago, was key leader of Mountains to Sound Greenway, which has protected much of the land, essentially driving across I-90 from Puget Sound to Cle-Elum.
Oh, Catherine, thank you. That's a great nomination, and Marcy was taking notes on that as well.
I believe that Jim Ellis is still living, although not well, if he is still alive. And yes, I certainly know of Jim Ellis, and his legacy in Seattle is huge. You're right, Catherine. Got me to thinking about some other people as Catherine was talking, because there are many civic leaders who changed the face of this city. There are also people who have maybe pioneered ways that we do business with one another, or ways that we make art. And somebody I'd nominate is a woman named Anne Folk, who was one of the early leaders of the Seattle Arts Commission in the 1970s, which started under Wes Ullman, who was mayor at the time. In 1972, you may remember, was the Boeing bust, for folks old enough to remember that. So it was quite a time to put money towards art.
Well, Marcy, as I think you know, there are lots of people here who tend to agree with you. They think that Seattle has something special when it comes to it being a place for innovators. It's attractive to innovators. And we actually asked that question, why, to people at an event that Seattle Public Library held called Invent Together. And here's what they had to say about that.
We have the best coffee, yeah, right? And coffee is like our superpower, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think, for me personally, what I find to be inspirational, I love the ocean, I love the mountains, I love nature. I love that I can be in technology and walk out the door and I'm in nature. And I love the juxtaposition of the natural and the digital.
Well, I'm originally from New York, moved here about 3 years ago, and what I immediately noticed was this kind of do-it-yourself attitude, right? It's the city's small enough, but the resources are there and accessible for folks to really get things done.
It's a city of communities. So no matter what group you're in, if you're artists or Microsoft people or Amazon, there's sort of a network underneath the surface where if you've been in Seattle for a while, you start to know Seattle and you start to be about 2 degrees of separation from anybody. I think that closeness and that ability to kind of jump past your network but also enrich yours can make a big difference for creativity.
I think there's something magical and introspective about the weather that we have here. Basically causes you to reflect and look out and go, why is this like this? How can we do things better? How can we do things differently? Also the huge amount of coffee that we ingest. Yeah. I'm sure that makes us all the more inspired.
Okay, two people credited coffee.
Must be time for a cup.
But you were nodding along with some of the things, that idea,
well,
of community and...
Absolutely community. And I have heard it said many times over the years that unlike other cities where, in particular, arts organizations, I'm an arts reporter, that's what I know the best, where there's a lot of competition, and there is competition, I've seen it, but that also... For example, the theater community is an ecosystem. This is Greg Falls, who founded ACT Theaters, very famous for saying this, that they can't exist very well without one another. And there's a lot of help that's lent in between the different theater companies. If there's something new, you know, just sharing and providing jobs for one another so that those theater artists can continue to live here.
Well, Marcy, you're looking for more suggestions.
Absolutely.
From listeners on who to profile, who to tell stories about. So how do you want to get those suggestions?
Best way is to go to our website, kuow.org/cityofdreams, and you'll see a form there for you to submit your suggestions. You can email me. It's marcy@kuow.org, M-A-R-C-I-E. But I think it's easier if you go right to the website.
And we're tweeting out a link to that suggestion form right now. Marcy Silman with KUOW City of Dreams team, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Jeannie.
This is The Record.